Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 291, and today I'm joined by Ricky Wilson of the Kaiser Chiefs. I was delighted to sit down with Ricky. We sat down, it was a good month or two ago now. It was just before the new Kaiser Chiefs album came out, in fact. I knew I couldn't release it for a bit because I had so many others lined up, but the opportunity to sit down with Ricky was one I didn't want to miss. And one of the reasons is a party that we both attended, which we will talk about. So I'll leave that there. Thank you for all the love in the last week or so. As you can hear, I'm still not quite over my illness, but hopefully I sound a lot better than the last week. Thanks for all the love for last week's two-parter with Jack Sexsmith. I mean, I'm still getting love for the Louis Theroux episode, the Kano episode, the Frank Turner episode, the Serge from Kasabian episode, the Joe Gilgan episode, the Sarah Pascoe episode. So many good episodes, episode. So thank you for all the love. If this is the first time you've tuned in, have a scroll through the back catalogue. We've had loads of good people from, I'm thinking of musicians. What musicians have we had? Billy Bragg, Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit, Amanda Palmer, Kate Nash. Loads of really good people. Go and have a scroll. Oh, Charlotte Hatherley from Ash. That made the Kate Nash one rhyme, and the pause seemed intentional, as if it was part of a... Anyway, I'll do a longer chat at the end, because there's some exciting stuff. The new Pod Bible has just come out, for example. That's very exciting. You can read it at podbiblemag.com. And the Pod Bible podcast is on iTunes and Spotify and Acast and everywhere. I won't ramble on too much, though. Obviously, patreon.com/ScroobiusPip for all your previews and bonus recorded content. We will have just had Poem of the Month. It's $1 a month. And speechdevelopmentrecords.com is where you can buy stuff in general. Loads of wonderful merch and some new things on their way. Next week's guest is Bill Bailey. Yeah, I've kept that one quiet, haven't I? You're going to love it. Anyway, let's get on with episode 291 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Ricky Wilson.
Refreshments arrive as we go.
Well, I'm refreshed.
Yeah, I'm the same. But yeah, I was just saying, it's one of the reasons for years I turned down all PR type requests.
Yes.
But these days I only accept them if they will give me 45 minutes or more.
Yeah.
Because of exactly that. Like you're just saying how it's so much more fun when they stop talking about the thing they're there to promote or there to sell, and you just have a conversation with people.
Well, the thing that, I mean, I did a TV show called The Voice.
Yes. Right?
And they all want advice, and I've got very little advice, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know how I've done it. Because it's all just based on you.
Yeah.
And what you can do, right? And I don't know what my talent is. I've always found that the people with the most talent doubt it the most.
Yeah.
Right? But my main thing was, don't try and sell anything.
Yeah.
Just sell yourself.
Yeah.
And then the product, I'm doing inverted commas.
Yeah.
Will follow. And that's it, really.
Completely. I couldn't agree more.
But unless the product is fantastic, and then you don't need to be involved at all.
It's that weird middle ground, isn't
yeah.
it? I'm having this a lot lately, where I'm kind of really falling out of love with so many elements of social media, and where I've moved into acting and it's yeah. a new industry, it's like, right, I kind of need the social media partly as a selling point because yeah. I can promote things well and things like that, but I'm constantly dreaming of the day I get either a big role or one of my yeah. scripts get picked up where I can go, right, forget the socials, I'm just going to concentrate on the art.
Well, just the other day I was looking at my Twitter and Instagram and yeah. realized it was just a work tool. Right.
Yeah.
So I put up a couple of pictures of holiday and then I went, I'm not, and I felt silly.
Yeah.
I felt like, why am I doing this? It's not, I don't need to tell anyone how I'm having a nice time on my holiday.
Yeah.
Because that kind of takes away from it. In the same way that, you know, when you see like a pop star on a jet. Right,
yeah.
And they put a picture of themselves sitting there looking fantastic with their shades on.
Yeah.
It's because they're excited too.
Yeah.
But they're trying so hard to look like this is every day.
Yeah.
And like, I think I'm going to get rid of it.
That's what I could.
But I don't think I'm famous enough to get rid of it.
It's a weird one, isn't it? I think you've nailed it there, though. I think because we've put everything through this social media filter now.
Yeah.
What people forget is sometimes you're just a human who's excited. I've had stuff before where someone's like, "Oh, you're showing off a bit there." I'm like, "No, I'm buzzing. This is amazing. I'm in this TV show. Yeah. How mental is that?" It's like you're going on about it all the time. It's like, wouldn't you?
But then there's other end of the spectrum. So you're buzzing for another reason, that you've just completed a 1,000-piece jigsaw.
Yeah.
So you put that online, and then people go, "Oh, not very rock and roll." And I'm like, going, "What the hell do you want?" What the hell do you want from me? Right? Do you want me to be on a jet or doing a jigsaw? Because my life has both
it's
in
the
them.
Perfect
right?
combination of the two.
Jet or jigsaw. But it's a weird thing because you know social media has taken away a bit of a sense of who I am.
Yeah, it's a weird one. When I had Flux a Pavilion on a while ago, he'd had a big realisation at that point because he'd done exactly the same. He'd posted a picture of him on holiday and then went, "What's that got to do with my music?" Yeah. And, you know, I'm posting it because I know it'll get a lot of likes because it's not just here's my new single that people just ignore and move on from. And he's like, but that's the point of it. I don't need to become a public figure.
If I stick my dog in a post, it gets like shitloads more likes than anything else.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's my dog.
Yeah.
Maybe I should put him on the cover of the album.
Yeah, well, you know. Guest slot. I should mention that I'm here with Ricky Wilson.
Oh, sorry, guys.
I will have mentioned it in the intro, I'm sure. I was looking forward to this one because we have only met once, but it was a lifesaver for me. We met at Mark Ronson's 33rd birthday party.
Was that the one in that weird country house?
It was somewhere dead fancy, and it was all fancy dress. I liked it because you had to come as your favourite LP because he's 33 and they play at 33. Yeah. And, I mean, I'd been supporting him before that, and we kind of said if he had any balls, he'd have it 4 months after his birthday. So he's actually 33 and a third, and it's accurate. But it's kind of what we were touching upon there, particularly at that point, even more so. I've never been comfortable in those kind of here's a big fancy celebrity thing. And me and my girlfriend at the time got chatting to you reasonably early, and it saved us from being that kind of awkward out in the corner. I don't know what to do. This feels weird. There's loads of famous people here.
Yeah, I mean, I once went to a party and got stuck chatting to the bass player from Kajagoogoo, and that wasn't so great. But that party was weird, right? Because this is not in any way anything negative about it.
Yeah.
But I got there. And I considered myself one of Mark's friends, right? I liked him. I spent a lot of time with him, and I knew him.
Yeah.
I still know him. But then I got there, and suddenly I was a bit like, I am out of my depth, and I didn't feel like one of his friends anymore because I wasn't as showy or didn't look to be enjoying myself as much as everyone else. And I just felt really uncomfortable, and he was like the Mark Ronson from the newspapers at his own birthday party.
Yeah.
And I've never had a birthday party. I get being centered attention from my work.
Yeah,
100%. So I don't really want to do it. But that night, I found it really awkward.
Yeah.
And there was just loads of people.
I think it's why we were drawn together, because it was exactly the same. It was like, I just don't. I was looking around and going, oh, cool, that person's dead famous. Oh, there's that person. But it's still, I didn't feel as if I was there as such. I felt as if I was looking in on it all and not.
It seems to have lasted that long as well in my head. It felt about like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we all went on a coach back to London.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bizarre, wasn't it?
At that time, I was living in a hotel in London.
Oh, wow.
Because the band had really taken off.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a place in London. I lived up north. But I had to be down, like, at least 5 days a week. So there was no point in me leaving the Kempinski Hotel at the end of Carnaby Street, where I lived for a good 6 months.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun, but so depressing.
I was going to say, how does that affect you psychologically? Because the band did blow up. It was like first record seemed to be the hugest thing ever. So to then go from not only it's all blowing up,
you're also living in a hotel, which is a really weird aesthetic and situation.
Well, I did my dissertation on hotels when I did my MA.
Wow.
So, like, because I did an MA in graphic art and design, I did it all about hotels. So I was enjoying it, and in a weird way, enjoying the depression of it.
Yeah.
Because it was a really nice way of, you know, people getting to, like, downers to kind of, like, cut themselves off.
Yeah, yeah.
I found the hotel did that for me.
Oh, wow.
And I was quite enjoying the fact I'd get back to my depressing room. And it was like, I don't know, sometimes when, this is quite a weird thing to say, but sometimes when I can't sleep, I put myself in my head in a far worse position I'm in, and I fall asleep really quickly. It relaxes me.
That's fascinating.
Because that can often
be the thing that will keep you awake. But I guess if you find the right place...
I just imagine I'm in hospital or something.
Amazing.
Or in a really crappy mobile home, and I fall asleep like that. It's crazy.
That's bizarre.
But it was such an odd thing living in a hotel, because at the time...
Do you feel like Alan Partridge?
Yeah.
That's got to be a good thing,
yeah,
right?
I mean, I knew the staff by name. Brilliant. And at the time, it was, you know, like in the 2000s, companies were far more willing to give you free stuff, right?
Yeah.
So stuff would be arriving at the hotel. I remember Puma used to send boxes and boxes of shoes, but not just for me, for the band, but they'd arrive at this hotel. And I had a corner full of boxes of Pumas, and like I'd get room service, and the guy would come, and he'd give me my club sandwich, which was probably what I ate three times a day. And then I'd go, I wouldn't tip him. I'd say, what size shoe are you? I'm an 8.5, mate. All right, I've got an 8 in a green or a 9 in the red. Which do you want? And then I'd be tipping in Pumas.
I love it.
But that sounds very rock and roll, but it couldn't have been more like, just, get through the day.
It's the reality of it all, isn't it? Because again,
I'm not moaning, though.
No, but it is one of the weird things. I spoke to... It's Billy Bragg I spoke to about this, and he was saying that some of the deepest and hardest depressions can be when you get to what you've always dreamed and it isn't what you thought. You know, Billy was saying he's lucky. He got to live his dream and he loved it.
Yeah.
He's had friends who've got to that right pinnacle and gone, oh, I'm not enjoying this.
Mm.
This isn't nice. But I think it seems like a weird one, but I remember... An example for me was going on Joe Rogan's podcast
because
I loved it. I listened all the time and it had like 10 million listeners an episode. And I was like, going on there, it's all going to change.
Yeah. Did you make a list of things you were going to say?
I did. I didn't prepare enough. I thought I was rubbish on it. But literally, I woke up the next morning and nothing had changed. It was like,
right.
Well, of course it didn't. I just went on a podcast and had a chat. And in reality, it's only about 1% of the guests he has on that I then become a huge fan of and follow up and research and all that. So I kind of thought... Again, easy example over here is getting played on Radio 1.
Yeah.
If you're getting played, as I predict a riot was, like every day, constantly, that makes a difference. If you're getting that one or two spot plays, it's not that big an impact. You kind of assume it's this big, great goal, but...
At the weekend, Gemma Kearney played Modern Way, one of our songs, on her morning show.
Yeah.
And it went round as a WhatsApp to all the people in the band from each other, going, that's great. And I was thinking... If this was 15 years ago and we had to message each other every time we played non-stop, but I was like, but we were genuinely, but that's the thing. It's like, if anything happened now, not in the maelstrom of everything happening, it's a gift.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it happening really quickly at the start, and it happened so quickly that we didn't feel like it had happened at all. Cause like we got our first number one album. All right. We went away. We were working every day. And we'd seen so many of our contemporaries mess up by not working.
Yeah.
Right. And our kind of rule of thumb was, it took us this long to make it happen, let's not take the foot off the gas. That we didn't stop to notice that it was going well. And it was only when we decided to take a year off in 2010, 5 years later, that we hated it. Took a year off and hated it. We just sat at home watching festival coverage on TV, just jealous. And envy is a horrible thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes you feel like, envy just feels like, I read the other day, I liked it. Envy is the religion of the mediocre.
Yeah.
And it was in a holiday book. I read that just on the beach.
That's
and, I
went,
and it was one of those things where you go, this book is 90,000 words of nonsense.
Yeah.
But they had that in it. So it made sense.
Something in there. Yeah. It's mad again when you are in the middle of it all, because the industry is built to not give you time to appreciate it. And
yeah.
and also to always dangle a carrot slightly further ahead.
But that's ambition. So whilst you're like, ambition is always just out of reach.
So
you're never going to get
there. This is going great, but you're like, but we should, hopefully we can get there. You're not sitting there and going, we've got a record out.
Yeah.
Like, just the, I mean, the maybe that alone. Might, how maybe, fucking cool is that? But, we've got a record out.
But maybe it might be slightly different now because things are, you release something and it's more of a global thing now. Whereas when we did it, you had to do one place, then go to another place.
Yeah.
And while you're in the next place, you're forgetting about the last place. But I suppose now people can do things from, you know, because of the internet.
Yeah.
I'm talking like a moron.
But no, it's a case of can it last, though? Because I always remember it was an inspiration, because when I started doing music and we had a kind of internet hit, we're exactly the same. We're like, right, we need to be gigging constantly and touring constantly. And I'd always heard of you guys doing that. A guy worked with an HMV when you guys blew up, this guy Chris was like, I've seen Kaiser Chiefs more than any other band. Like they're constantly on.
Whether I like it or not.
They're playing everywhere and they work hard. So where did that kind of drive and ethic come from in that respect?
Just from the fact that we did everything and anything when it started.
Yeah.
And why, when do you stop doing that?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've made mistakes where we thought we were too big for our boots. But I think even on this last, bringing a record out a couple of weeks ago, not trying to sell it, by the way, it's done all right. But the thing about it is, even then I had a week, and on paper I knew this is all I have to do.
Yeah.
A week of 5 a.m. starts, 1 a.m. finishes, push through that. But even halfway through I thought, I can't do this.
How'd you find it? Because I was seeing you on everything and it's great. But it's at times it's like, well, that's not the part you're thinking of when you're writing a record or starting a career. That because you've got this, the band themselves got to that huge level. You, I do want to talk about The Voice at some point. Yeah. You've gone off and done that as well. So you've got that daytime exposure level. So you're having to go on shows that may or may not be.
Luckily, I really like TV studios.
Brilliant.
And I really like radio studios, and I still get a buzz from it. There's nothing quite like just walking in, even if you hate the show, like GMB.
Yeah.
And they're on air over there. And you're clatting around over here and you're just like, this is going out to millions of people.
Yeah.
And I still get a buzz from it. So I still want to get up and go there. But then you're doing everything. So you go from doing something in front of millions of people to then doing a half-hour phoner for something you never heard of.
Yeah.
And you can barely hear them. Then you go into a room with someone who's doing an interview and they haven't got a pen or anything or recording it. And you're going, and they say they'll remember the good bits. And then I'm like... but it's like, it's proper scattergun approach to selling a record.
Yeah.
Like, but then I didn't mind that in the years, but then I was thinking, I can't be bothered. Some of these things feel like a waste of my time. And then I start thinking to myself, am I on too much? Am I just starting to piss people off by being on TV all the time?
Oh, I think a lot of that can be fueled by the ever-present imposter syndrome that so many people have. Because we can look and go, how many interviews did Bowie do? Loads. Maybe I can step back and do it. But then as soon as it comes round, you're like, no, I should promote this. We need to make sure we work really hard on this record. We really need to make sure it gets out.
I was just the other day looking at photographs of Bowie performing live at his height in theatres to about 500 people, all sat there with their arms folded, appreciating it in a different way than people go now. There weren't circle pits.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
It was just people like in a tie, you know. This is interesting, watching a man in a leotard prance around. But what I do like about the music industry is that it's not, you know, people go, oh, it's changing so fast. It's not even that old, right?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, 75 years old at the most, the music industry.
Yeah, it's mad.
And so, of course, it's changing. It's never going to settle. And, you know, even the fact that the prevalence now of people suing people for copying their songs, I'm like, well, we're going to run out soon.
Yeah.
The mathematics of it means that... There was one the other day, Mark Ronson and Lady Gaga's song.
Yeah.
And a guy suing him because it's got the same three notes in a row. I'm like, yeah, but I heard it and I thought of a different song that's got the same three notes in a row.
Yeah.
We got to change the rules about that.
Mate... punk music is going to blow you away. You're going to be going crazy when you hear that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Nile Rodgers should be suing everybody for inventing like funk, but
it's
not.
An interesting one though, because it's weird. I had that exact same thought the other day. I was sitting there, I was driving home from Edinburgh, so I couldn't get out my phone and Google it, and I was thinking, how old is the bass guitar? Because it's not been around that long. No. Like, the guitar will have been around a lot longer,
but
the bass
definitely.
Itself is like, it's not that long. That's mad how that's, it feels like it's ever present.
And also, you know, like technology, you know, they're saying that if science carries on at the speed it's going, then the first person to live to 1,000 is already born, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Well, if that happens with music, then, like, I don't really bother myself about worrying where it's going. I'm just going to strap myself in and enjoy it.
100%.
Because it's a lot of fun. And then you've got to just think, the only people that'll be left behind are the critics.
Yeah.
Because they'll have nothing to criticise, because we'll be making stuff that they just won't understand.
Yeah.
And I know, because I just make pop songs that I like, right? Which I seem to be criticised for and applauded for in equal measure.
Yeah.
And as long as they let me do it, I'll keep doing it, because it doesn't really matter to me. I read a criticism of us the other day, and at one hand, it just said that on our new album, we've managed to swerve huge political issues of the day, such as climate change and equality of sexes. And I was going, well, if I'd have just made an album about that and then made this one, then yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Did you say that about Galway Girl by Ed Sheeran? You know, he's not really dealing with the political issues of the day. It's like, well, you know, if I want it, I will. And if I don't, I won't.
Yeah.
And just because we once wrote a song called I Predict a Riot, which was, I mean, not that political. We were just trying to write. We always had this rule about trying to write. We've never written songs that tell people what to do, right?
Yeah.
Sitting opposite Thou Shalt Always Kill Me.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. I always get called out on it. But the last line on that is "Thou shalt think for yourselves."
Yeah,
that's
kind of the
point of it.
Yeah,
the point is, it's a 3-minute diatribe telling you what to do that ends with going, ignore all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Think for yourselves. But, yeah.
We were furious, by the way. I remember backstage Germany. I think we were supporting Block Party and we weren't mentioned. I was furious.
I had this with Serge the other day.
Did you?
From Kasabian.
Did you?
That's like, that's
no, but
so,
it was funny because
so mad to think that
we really no, but everyone wanted to be in that little bit.
Because we had
that,
people who were in the list
bit.
Who were offended by being in it. So it's
know,
that weird
yeah.
kind of you're there or yeah, you're
yeah,
there.
I would,
you
I
do,
probably
you
would have
you
hated
you
to be in it. But, anyway. But then there was because a lot of songs I love, especially like Oasis, who I used to worship.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was too young and stupid not to.
Yeah.
They always told you what to do.
Yeah,
you can do this, you can be that, you can live forever, whatever. And when we started, I was like, we're never going to tell people what to do. We'll just comment on it. And we've always stuck by that. I'm quite pleased with that. It's something that no one's noticed about our stuff.
No, I think it's right.
Even we have a new song. Sorry, I'm not trying to sell it. I'm talking about as a point of view.
No, you're allowed to talk about your new song. You've worked hard on the record.
The people down the corridor,
yeah.
We have a song called Green Universal Building, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, just for the listener. Yep. And we'd signed to a major again, which is great. You don't have to get the tube as much.
Yeah.
That's about it, right? That's about it. And then it's called People Know How to Love One Another. And then someone suggested, call it Love One Another. It'll be easier to get on the radio.
Mm.
And I was like, A, Love One Another is a lame title for a song.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it's a command.
Yeah.
And we don't write commands because I don't feel empowered enough to tell people what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Empowered,
I mean, it's interesting. You've spoken about strapping yourselves in and enjoying the ride.
Mm.
You've spoken about the kind of the blessing and curse of exposure bringing criticism. How was that in the early days? Because you write pop songs, but they come from a punk sensibility.
Or
particularly in the early days, it came from a punk sensibility. And punk was the genre I grew up in love with.
Yeah.
But also the genre I was so aware how ridiculous it was. Because it's like, I love this band, but if I don't want them to be successful. If they get successful, I'm going to hate this band. There is that whole turn on you and selling out if you have success. And the fact that you exploded... Again, I literally remember with that one song. I remember I Predict a Riot being on the kind of alternative scene and then it being in the mainstream and it kind of there being a certain amount of a backlash of going, oh no, it's rubbish. And it's like, You were going mental to that literally a week ago in a club.
Well, it's kind of, it's a rite of passage, which I'm pleased we went through because, I mean, I don't think we could survive if people, with being, for our sensibilities, we like being the underdog, right?
Yeah.
And it really fuels us. And being, having a little backlash, especially with the smaller music press, really helped us because we were desperate to get back in it. And in doing that, we'd never messed up. We never did a Sex on Fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We never fully went, we never jumped the shark.
Yeah, I don't think.
I mean, we did let Mark Ronson produce a record.
Yeah.
But then it was just hilarious because I was more interested in following him out on Nights Out because it was like proper tabloid. It was amazing. Yeah, and then the next day looking through, once when Mark was doing the record, Lily Allen came to say hi to him. And there were loads of paparazzi outside the studio. And me and Nick were stood there with him and Lily Allen. And then the next day in the paper, we're going to be in the papers. Open it up, middle pages said, Mark Ronson helps Lily Allen move into a new gaff, refusing to lift a finger to help the removal men. And there's me and Nick stood there. We're like, so we're the removal men. All right. So there was a story, which was quite good, which was Mark's making our record and Lily Allen's doing a backing vocal. Good story. Because she's for a record. Not bad. But they went, nah, let's say that the removal men.
Let's assume they're the removal men.
I quite like that.
Was there any temptation for a removal men side project to come?
The removal men is a great name.
It's a brilliant name.
All right, we'll stick that in your notes.
It's got to happen. That's got to happen.
I do like the name, the removal men.
It's really nice. It's good. So, just
change the subject a bit. So I've always resisted DJing for money, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to do one, right?
Right.
With my fiance.
Amazing.
So we're going to do it together. And it just came today because I said, oh, will you tweet about it? It's in September sometime. And because I always thought, I just don't want to be like someone like Jambo from Hollyoaks at a student union. Like, I don't want to, or some Love Island winner, fist pumping the air. So I want to do it properly. So we're going to learn how to do it, me and my girlfriend. And also, it won't have to be that good. It's just basically playing Mr. Brightside 15 times. Yeah. That's all we have. Yeah. Right. I'm quite looking forward to it. And then I thought, can me and my fiance be called the Comical Brothers? Has it been done? Because I quite like the idea of getting matching boiler suits.
It's wonderful.
Because she really likes the Chuckle Brothers.
Where is it? Do you know where it is?
I do, but I'm not going to say because it sounds like I'm down on it.
No, I want, but
I'd actually want to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, completely.
I've never done it because I've always looked down on people that do it.
Again, I think all these things, it's about choosing to do them when you want to do them, or if I think there's so much that you can avoid doing because you're like, oh, that's crap, that's cheesy, that's
this, oh
that's
yeah,
that.
No, totally.
Like, if it comes in and you're like, oh, that feels like, again,
oh, no, totally,
like
totally.
Me and my missus can do that. We'll have a really good night. It's
there's,
like,
there's so many things in life like that that the snob in you refuses to let you enjoy yourself.
Yeah,
right. And refuses to let you watch certain things because everyone's watching them.
It's magnified as soon as you're in the public eye.
It's a little bit like, I'm a little bit like a TV squirrel with Grace because she watches a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And then she'll be watching it and I'll be like standing there, you know, with the plate and some toast. And I'll be like, okay, oh, what's this then? That's Love Island. Oh, this is awful, awful. Half an hour later, I'm like going, oh, Michael is a dick. What? Like, you know what I mean? And then, but you get sucked in.
They know how to do it, man.
But no, well, the thing is, it's interesting because it's absolutely engineered to tickle every single one of normal people's senses.
It's beautifully done.
I do enjoy being... I mean, it's you know, the television, the opiate of the masses, it's more than that. It's like, it's food.
I had Garth Jennings on, and he wrote and created the movie Sing, which is an animated movie essentially about a reality music contest.
A pig, right?
Yeah. And as soon as I saw the trailer, I was excited about it, because I was like, oh, right, how they can hit all the beats that these reality shows hit, but you don't have to feel annoyed that you're being manipulated or that it's contrived, because it's literally an animation. Of course it's they've thought everything out carefully. So you don't have to be a snob about it and go, oh, I don't watch reality music show or whatever else. You can just enjoy it. And I watched that and I got all the emotions of the emotional backstory, the when they sing that big song and the whole place goes crazy. It's like, I get to enjoy that without my own snobbishness of going, well, obviously they've just set that up to be like that.
I watched A Star Is Born last night, It was exactly like a TV talent show. Like you said, hit the same beats.
I love it.
That moment when it's like she stood side stage and he's beckoning her to come on.
Yeah.
She comes on. She knows all the words instantly. It's like, wow, this is like great. But yeah, it was aimed at people to enjoy it. Made you laugh and cry and feel something, and then left you feeling a bit disappointed when it was finished.
Yeah.
Because you were going, I've been waiting to watch that for ages, and now that was it.
It's done.
Yeah, reality TV's a friend of mine.
Yeah. So how was it to join a show like The Voice? And did you have any of the kind of almost the self-defeating contemplation of, no, I shouldn't do this. Is this the right thing? Is this the wrong thing?
Nick, who used to be in the cast, he's always said that if you have 1% of doubt about not doing something, you shouldn't do it.
Right.
And I was 50-50. And then I had to go against that rule. And I'd been to a meeting while Nick was still in the band, but I hadn't told him about doing it 2 years before.
Right.
And, you know, I was a stone heavier and had crooked teeth and I didn't get it. And then 2 years later, he left the band. I'd had my teeth straightened, I'd lost a stone, and suddenly I got it. And although I was thinking to myself, is that all it takes? You just get your teeth straightened and lose a bit of weight and you're palatable. TV.
Such a weird situation because you can see the horror of it, but then you're also like, oh, that's quite nice.
Same with everything. It's like when you're watching the awards ceremony, you go, ah, it's all fixed. Mm. And then you win it, you don't mind that it's all fixed.
100%.
So it's horses for courses, which is a great phrase because it means the same thing no matter how you say it. You can say horses for courses, so different horses run well on different courses, or you can say horses fuck horses. Which means the same thing. It's just like, you know, horses don't fuck monkeys. Fuck horses.
They do.
Am I allowed to swear on
this? Yeah.
But I kind of enjoyed being swept up. I'd never seen it.
Mm.
Never seen it since. I only watch the ones I'm on. I'm not an idiot. But I was absolutely terrified the first day.
Yeah.
Because like anything, I'm good at getting jobs. I can get any job I go for an audition, interview for. Mm. But then I have to do it, and doing it is always horrible.
Yeah.
And suddenly I thought, they have total control over my personality.
Yeah.
However they want to pitch me, they can pitch me.
Yeah,
and they were very kind to me.
Yeah.
Because they made me kind of like boy next door, everyman kind of character, which was nice juxtaposed against the A-list celebrities.
Yeah.
And I think it worked really well, but... You know, all the things that I hated about... I mean, I had to watch it. For a start, I watched it kind of like cringing. Secondly, I watched it with my chin sticking out because every time I looked at myself, I was going, he's got a massive double chin, that guy. So I was like watching it, urging myself to do that. Every time I was like annoyed or angry or upset or emotional, I was like, oh, God, I'd get rid of that. But they kept it all in and that was the stuff that worked.
Yeah.
And then you've got to think that your image of yourself is not what people like you see.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Completely. And it's important every now and then to do things that you're not in complete control over. And you're not the one vision and voice who's going, here's how we will be presented and here's what will work. Because there will be things that you're getting rid of just because, again, I don't know how my chin looks there. Yeah. You might have said something absolutely amazing that bit, but you won't have seen that. I don't like that. It's like, no, that was your moment. The big moment where you delivered this thing, because you're going to be critical of specific insecurities you have of yourself that no one else will see.
But then even like stuff like I look back at it and think it was amazing. I had a great time.
Yeah.
But I look back on it with, we don't sit and watch it, but we talk about it, obviously, with my fiance. Because, I'd like to do it again because, perfectly frank, it pays well, right?
But, of course.
And then Grace always says, you're not doing it again. You were an absolute nightmare when we did it.
Oh, really?
Like, what way? And she was going, you were just anxious all the time, like a complete mess. And that was all you thought about. And I was going, no, it was great. It was loads of fun. Obviously, all you remember is the highlights. You don't think about the fact that you're... I just got so into it and I was really, I just really wanted to win it.
I was going to say, did it mean a lot when you won and when you had consecutive ones and stuff like that?
But I think also, like, I'm glad I didn't do it again because I'd kind of figured out how to win it.
Right.
And it was easy if you just kind of like, because you just got to know your audience.
Yeah.
And as soon as you kind of like can narrow in on the fact that, yeah, it's going out to how many million people, less and less as the series went on, but it's going out to many people. Like, who votes for it, right? So you've got to think about who actually is picking up the phone and voting for it. Because we all sit and watch it, oh, they should win. But to go from that to picking up the phone.
Yeah, it's a massive difference, yeah.
Right? And I'm not sure how many people are voting. Can't be that many, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you know. Yeah, you're right. I've
never
voted in it.
No, but you've always got an opinion on these things. You know, oh, no, they lost. Did you vote? No. Right, so I thought about who was voting and I would just like totally aim it at them. And the bigger the other celebrities went with their kind of like, they were like, you'd have to like take them on days out or stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, Will I Am would take some kid to tea at Buckingham Palace and Tom Jones would have him sing live with them at something.
Yeah.
And then they'd say, what do you want to do? And I'd tell them what I want to do and say, no, that's not big enough. And then I'd say, no, I'm saying this guy, this singer, hasn't seen his wife in ages, so I'm going to send them on a date and I'm going to take his daughter to the zoo, right? And they'd say, no, it's not good enough. And I'd say, that's what I want to do. And so you'd have VT of me just walking around the zoo with a little girl and them having dinner somewhere.
Yeah.
And then everyone at home going, oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so it's like, it's just a, because it's all smoke and mirrors, yeah, and a bit of a trick.
It's finding the things you can actually relate and emotionally attach yourself to, because we're desensitized to the grandeur of it all.
Yeah.
It's like, I would assume that Will I Am can take them anywhere. So nowhere is going to impress me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's literally like, all right, well, that's not hard.
And it did wind him up that the fact that I had this kind of secret, like back, like side entrance to the British public that he didn't have.
Yeah.
And he just confused him, the fact that I could like talk about Rainbow, the TV show, and he wouldn't know what I was talking about, but the audience would all be there laughing along, and it would just frustrate him so much.
I love it. So how was it, and how long did it take you to get, or did you get comfy with the kind of the coaching and guidance side of it? I mean, we've spoken about how in your music you've always said, we're not going to tell people what to do.
Yeah,
kind of the point of being a coach The Voice is to tell people what to do or to guide them in some way. How did you adapt to that or find that? Or
I think it's, I don't really know. I mean, it was, it came quite naturally in the respect that I can't really remember what I said.
Yeah.
It's weird because the ones that I liked the most were the most messed up people because it came across in the way they sang.
Yeah.
Right? And it had something interesting. And the thing about doing reality shows is you start listening to voice after voice that sounds like someone doing an impression of someone on a TV reality singing show.
Yeah.
You can teach anyone to sing like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So I'd find the ones that were like, sounded absolutely mental. And then you'd meet them and you go, oh, they're mental.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few of them dropped out because they thought, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
But to go on a, you know, any of these TV shows, there's an element of Last Chance Saloon to it.
Yeah,
people think. But that's what, it's like, everyone thinks it's Last Chance, but it's not really. Because nothing's ever your last chance, but I never really liked the desperation. I liked just the madness of the ones that thought this was their only way to get in front of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw some really talented people. The only tough comes part where you're thinking you can sing a million times better than I can sing.
Yeah.
So you've got that covered, right?
Yeah.
You know, all I can do is kind of give you a helping hand into how to not come across as a complete dick.
Yeah.
Or if you need to come across as a complete dick, do that.
Completely,
you
completely.
Know. Because I do both, you know.
Right.
You've got to be overconfident sometimes, and know when to be.
Yeah. I always remember seeing the first time I saw the Strokes.
Yeah.
And they were perfectly fine, but they didn't seem interested at all. And I would much rather, particularly at that point, have seen a band who are prancing about, going absolutely nuts, even if they're oozing arrogance and to an annoying level. I'd much rather see that than someone who's just, we're doing our thing. Do you think you learn a lot from doing The Voice? Because I always feel it's often easier to look at other people than to look at yourself. So if you're looking at these acts and going, here's what they're doing wrong, here's what they're doing right, this, that, there's going to be points where you go, you know what, I can see that they're doing that wrong. I do that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I've not been able to see that I do that wrong, but, because like, it's me.
But like, even like you talked about the Strokes then, when we first started, I think, you know, people always ask what you're influenced by. Yeah. And I strongly believe that you're influenced a lot more by things you hate than you are by things you like.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you take everything you don't want to be and put that to one side, what's left is what you want to be.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to point yourself at, oh, I want to be like The Clash, or I want to be like, you know, whatever. You go, what's left is what you are. And I think that's what we did when we started. We were fed up with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And what ended up was we just came out bouncing around looking like we really wanted to be there. And we just thought, actually, we're fed up of pretending that we're not, we don't want to be there. We actually want to be there. And it suited us really well. I mean, it wound people up quite a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when, like, you know, within like a year, we're like zooming up the bills of festivals.
Yeah.
Ahead of people that we really shouldn't have been ahead of.
Yeah,
just because
yeah.
We'd had a few top 10 hits. And, you know, now it's weird because we're playing festivals and there's people ahead of us that I haven't heard of. But then you look at their stats and you go, oh, 50 billion streams. And I've never heard of them.
It's, go, yeah. It's interesting, but, though,
but,
isn't it?
But your question was,
If you learnt ways to look at yourself, because obviously you've now come and worked on this new record. So was there a different approach?
Well, there's an element of kind of doing it a long time. 40, you know, you're old when you forget. 42.
Yeah.
And there's an element of when you get to about 20.
Yeah.
You stop worrying about a lot of things that you worried about when you were 16. Like if I was 16 and someone saw me naked, I'd be devastated. Yeah. And you get to 20 and you think, I couldn't give a crap.
Yeah. Right?
And then when you get to 42, you start thinking about, you know what, it'll work itself out. So I've really stopped worrying about the way I'm perceived, because I just went, well, it'll be different tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because I'll probably say something else and it's going to wound people up. And also, if people are primed to be wound up, which they are now because of the internet, I can't do anything about that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And it kind of, it's quite liberating, knowing that when you go on Lorraine,
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of people angry that you're on Lorraine, but you've just got to think to yourself, they're watching Lorraine.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Like when you get past that threshold where, and again, I think it's why I think the myth of the difficult second album exists. I think the difficult second album is just on your first album. Generally, the people who are listening to it are the people who want to listen to it.
Yeah.
If it's successful, it's the second album. There's people who have to listen to it
because
they have to review it and they have to. The first one, they didn't have to. You were no one. So I don't think there's really a difficult second album. I think there's a difficult new audience who are now going to be like. And it's the same on things like if you're going on these huge daytime TV shows. It's like, well, I had no intention of meeting these viewers, but I've been put in there, and now I have to deal with
them. I always remember this thing that my mum said to me. When I was a kid, there was a shop just out of town, out of Leeds, called Reedman's, right? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a, like, seconds kind of shop, like clothes, but like, you know, not factory rejects, but like, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And it was like really uncool, but it had like some Ben Shermans in it, and it was good. But I was terrified of seeing anyone from school in Reedman's, right?
Right, yeah.
Because I thought to myself, if they see me there, they'll get around. But then my mum just suddenly said, if they see you in there, they're in there, right?
100%.
And that, I think about that every time I go on a TV show I don't really want to be on. Because it's like, well, if they're watching it, what are they doing watching it if they don't like it? And then you just got to go, you know what? I'm finding new audiences and I'm not that picky, because you can play to cool people, but you can't fill arenas with them.
Yeah.
And I like playing to as many people as possible. And that's not... That's not selling out. That's the opposite. It's buying into that. It's kind of going, I want to get this message across. And I put myself in a position where I'm making pop music. And I want to keep it to myself.
Yeah.
There might have been a time when I did, but, you know, we made the first record without an audience, without critics. We made the second record with a huge audience and huge amount of critics.
Yeah.
And we survived it. And then we made loads of mistakes. And on this last record, I was really nervous about criticism until I got loads of it, and then I didn't care. Yeah. It's weird because you kind of
dilutes
it,
right?
You're just like, and then you start to find it funny.
Yeah.
Then you start thinking they're not listening. Then you start going, you've mentioned the first three songs. That says a lot.
Yeah.
We bought a record out in 2015, and about just towards the end of one of the songs, it had about a minute and a half, and it was a a poem I'd written, narrated by Bill Nighy, right? And then we put the record out, and then I'd read the reviews, and I knew if they didn't mention that poem by Bill Nighy, that, you know, read about Bill Nighy, they hadn't listened to the record. Because it's too delicious of a thing to put in a review.
Yeah.
So I just literally read it, and if it was like they didn't mention it, I knew they hadn't listened to it. Yeah,
they've not paid
attention. Because you can't, I mean, it was just a load of pop songs with one bit where it was written.
With Bill Nighy reading a poem in the middle. Of course you're going to mention
it. Yeah, because I think that it's quite a clever thing to put that in records. I'd like put in at the end of one of the songs, like track eight, say, and the review code is 46X92. Make sure you put this in the review or I'll know you haven't listened to it, you know, and then they'd have to put it.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, I like that.
You mentioned surviving there and like as
clinging
as
on, man, I prefer to
clinging on, but I think it's an important thing, and I think it's an overlooked thing. If I think back to when you guys were kind of blowing up, and there was a few different bands that had that edge that were going into a mainstream area, and I think of Ordinary Boys, Hardfire, that kind of thing. Again, love or hate any of them, they were all huge amounts of exposure at one point, and then fizzled out or reformed or did other things. What do you think has been the key to kind of to holding it together, or holding it together as such? Because obviously Nick has moved on and things like that. So
I think it's just the fact that the simple thing is the alternative is just unthinkable.
Yeah.
Don't want to do anything else.
Yeah. Do you think it's that year off you had after 5 years that you had a year off and went, oh, we don't know what to do. We need to do this forever.
And, you know, I think that there isn't a point where one of us doesn't want to pack it in.
Mm.
But I think as long as there's no more than three of you that want to pack it in, then you're fine. But also there's a playfulness that comes after being in a band for such a long time. Because yesterday we got offered this thing and it's playing, it's 7 minutes, quite a lot of money at a sports event.
Right.
And one of us said, I'm on holiday. And so I replied, is it vocals to track? Right. So there's an element of like push and pull, which is me saying to him, like, I can do it without you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm never going to do it.
Yeah.
But I think there's an element, we just can't think of anything better to do.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think we've done it by stealth as well, because we're still the underdog in the fact that, you know, I do read things, you know, I don't want to think I'm being negative about the critics, because I do quite enjoy it.
Yeah.
But they're saying, who would care about a new Kaiser Chiefs record in 2019? I'm going, yeah, we just sold out an arena tour in January, February.
Yeah.
So, not you.
Yeah.
Right? But you live in your bubble that you've created, probably through social media, because that's the problem with it. It does create, it's like bubble wrap. Completely. We all have our little areas where we do think the new Bon Iver record is the most important thing in the world, but my mum and dad would never have heard of it. Whereas they will have heard of Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
Because they probably don't like it.
And again, it's the thing that people need to realise is all of those things are fine.
Do you
know what I mean? It's fine to be really into that. It's fine to be into this. It shouldn't be this, oh, I can't believe you like that, or you like this. But they like it, so let them like it. Or they don't like it, so let them not like it. It's like it's this weird thing that it seems to be a battle between the underground and the mainstream, or the social media bands and the TV.
Also now there's such cross-pollination between people that aren't even... It used to be a music scene where we're all kind of tribal, and now that doesn't really exist anymore. So you've got to, you know, if you're going to give advice to musicians, say, well, if anyone's Twitter account ends with the initials of the football team they support, ignore that entirely, because that is just going to be bollocks, right? Because they just want to, you know, have some hate. And then the other day, I was like, someone criticized, I can't remember what it was, but it was just funny, the response that he had. Someone said something bad about me and Sleaford Mods in the same thing. And I was like, what's he doing, right?
Yeah.
Don't go against Sleaford Mods, because they will destroy you, right? 100%. And then, so I replied, and then I went, you've only been on Twitter for a day. And he went, get in, troll, get out. That's what his rude fault. And I was like, that's what he's doing. And I thought, he's just a semi-professional troller that knows what he's doing. He doesn't even have a permanent account.
And the pride
he gets
of it,
in,
though,
says something. Yeah.
The pride of it, I'm really good at this. Yeah. Don't question me, Ann.
I am.
I know what I'm doing here. Yeah. It's funny, though, because that all comes and goes. I remember when I worked in a record store and it was the era of James Blunt and Dido being the biggest things in Wales. And me and my mates dubbed it as music for people who aren't into music.
Yeah, that is true.
But then it's the realisation now that, again, that's absolutely fine. You don't have to have grown. It just happens I grew up with this mad connection to music. There's loads of people who didn't. And that's okay.
Yeah, I'm not into Fabergé eggs.
Yeah.
But if there's one that everyone thinks is the kind of most average Fabergé egg, that's the one I look to for now I know what one looks like.
Yeah.
I'll get out now.
I've seen it,
So that's probably what, that's what it was for, the coffee table kind
get
of
Get in,
music.
Look at the Fabergé egg.
Get out. No, but I know what you mean. That people are not, but more and more, the internet hasn't made it more universal, but it's made it even more capitalist than anything, because the rich get richer and if you're on a certain playlists, that's it. But it's harder to crack into than it was. They say, you can make it in your bedroom. Yeah, but you don't get the support from the top, which is what you need. But then this is an entirely other massive conversation. But, it's like, if you can get into the three albums a year by in public, if you can get in, because going to see gigs, if you're playing at the level, like arena level, it's like people go to see one, two a year.
Yeah.
And you've got to really appreciate that.
100%, yeah.
I mean, I used to go at gigs every week, twice a week at least, right? And now I go hardly ever.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, oh, where is it? Oh, it's at Islington. Oh, it's about 10 minutes in taxi now.
Yeah.
Nah, I'll stay in. Right, I mean, I'm like that. It's weird. Whereas I used to be like going, it'll be with the coach ride there, 2 hours, right? But now I can't be bothered.
So why
should I be? I've got to appreciate everyone that goes and buys the tickets.
Yeah, and it's exactly that. It's that weird thing of London will always be the biggest show on the tour, but not always the best. Because again, London is somewhere where there's 10 gigs a week.
Yeah,
there can be that smallness. Those shows, again, if you're doing this arena type level, those people who do see 3 or 4 gigs a year.
Yeah.
They're really invested on that being a good night. They're not going and going, well, come then, impress me. They're going and going, fucking night out.
My favourite gigs, gigs are the ones, if a venue is in the centre of town, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
As soon as you put an arena just outside town, people have to drive to it, it's parking costs, all this kind of stuff.
They've got annoyed before they're there.
Yeah.
And they're thinking about, well, should we leave early to dodge
But I love, like, Manchester Arena's great. Like, loads of the theatres that are in towns are great because you also get an element of, which just doesn't happen anymore, walk-up, which is, like, fantastic because it's just people going, we've had a few, there's something going on, let's go and see it. And those are the kind of, I in many ways, I kind of prefer the people that we're trying to win over. That's why festivals are so good, though.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing, I'll wrap things up now by kind of asking about the live element of... How's that changed over the years? Because it feels like at the moment you feel like you're enjoying feeling like underdogs again, or
feeling like
you've got something to prove again. Does that help with the live? Because that is, you need to have that
energy, but
you need to have that drive to go, fucking come on,
live,
we'll show you.
Live has always been weird for me because I really enjoy it once I'm on. I hate the prospect of it. But then I don't think I've ever got it right. 100%, because sometimes I feel like I'm going a bit too cabaret.
Right,
and sometimes I don't know where to place myself because I can't just stand there and want them to appreciate it.
Yeah.
So then I start asking to be appreciated. Then I feel a bit too cabaret.
Yeah.
So I kind of swing from side to side. But maybe the fact that I haven't really got it right yet means that I'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because I can't be Liam Gallagher. No one can.
No.
I can't just stand there and expect you to love me, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of ask for it. So I turn into like some kind of like tap dancing puppy going like, enjoy it.
Yeah,
but then I'm not Freddie Mercury enough to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of like, I just kind of, I like the fact that, anything live, I like the fact that I don't feel I've got it right.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's finding that spot. I always remember going and seeing Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes on one of their tours, and it was the first tour that he wasn't just being, let's go. He was proper a performer.
Yeah.
And it was my favourite gig I've seen them do. My mate I went with didn't like it at all. Was like,
Really?
Oh, no, I liked it when it was proper. I liked it when it... And I was like, no, but look, he's loving that.
Yeah.
He's not doing that because he feels he has to. He's doing that because that's what he wants to do. And that's
then,
what
but
makes
then
it
there's
good.
An element.
If it was that feeling of, oh, they've got to big venues, he's putting on a show, he's active. But it's like, no, he's loving that.
There's a weird performer's self-destruction as well, because as soon as people start noticing you're doing something, you stop doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is weird, right? Oh, I like it when you do this. Right, that's gone. Right?
Yeah,
it's
weird.
It's also...
I'm conscious of it now.
And there's a weird thing, you know, you fall over, and after the gig, you're coming out of the stage door and they say, oh, best bit was when you fell over. Yeah. And you just think to yourself, should I just fall over every It always reminds me of that bit in Trading Places. You know when he's holding a vase? You know, Trading Places. He's holding a vase and he drops it and they said, but that was insured for 40,000. So you've just made us. And he goes, you want me to break anything else? Yeah. It always reminds me of that performing. Because there's an element of like, so you like it. Hello. Oh, can I call? This is Eddie Murphy.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, there's an element of like people... that live, it's all about going wrong.
Yeah.
But you can't go wrong on purpose.
Yeah.
Unless, have you ever seen videos of that Metallica tour where at the end, the whole stage collapses?
Right.
Oh, it's fantastic.
No, I haven't seen it.
So they once did a show where right at the end, like a man runs across on fire.
Yeah.
And a man falls down, girders come down, and they're still playing and the whole thing's collapsing. But people were having heart attacks thinking it was actually happening.
Amazing.
But it's incredible. Watch it on YouTube.
We'll end it there. Thank you very much for your time. When we've stopped and I'm packing down, I'm going to show you a video of Big Daddy Kane when he had this thing where it goes wrong. And it's the most mind-blowing thing you'll ever see. I'll post it on Instagram as well, but I keep a copy of it on my phone.
Do you?
Because it's so good.
All right.
I'll show you that. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure. Much appreciated. Thank you.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. How good was Ricky? We got cut off a little bit at the end there as some other people needed the office, the meeting room that we were recording in. But I was really pleased with the chat. I loved chatting with Ricky. Such a lovely, open and down-to-earth lad. So hope you enjoyed that. Speaking, I mean, this is an obvious link, but there's also a comedian called Rich Wilson, and he's got a podcast called Insane in the Men Brain, and it's talking to men about their mental health. And that sounds really heavy. It's not. He's a comedian. Half his guests are comedians. A few of them are musicians, all sorts of stuff. It's really good. He recently had a guy called 76 on, who's one of my best friends and oldest friends, and it's a fascinating episode. I learned stuff I didn't know about 76. I've just thought I'd get a recommendation in for that. Speaking of recommendations, you know I'd love you all to go and listen to the Pod Bible podcast or to grab a copy of Pod Bible magazine. If you go on our socials, you'll know where we've left some or where we're going to be handing them out in person. Again, we do it on the regular. Or you can read them digitally at podbiblemag.com. Is there anything else I need to plug or tell you about? I don't think there is. That feels about it, right? My illness was rough, mate. I had this fever, right? And it started just before the last We Are Lizards, which was amazing, by the way. Sam Duckworth is the best. But yeah, I got this. I started to feel ill, and I happened to have my club night that night. And I was driving anyway, so I was sober. But over the night, I started to ache more and more and more. And when I got in at like 4 o'clock, I had these intense, violent shivers that my whole body was just, every muscle was tensed up and shaking. It was horrible. So I managed to get myself up to bed. And when I woke up, I was gone. That Sunday was a write-off. I had to go downstairs and get some water. No word of a lie, it took me 3 hours because I kept having to just curl into a ball because my muscles and joints were just in unbelievable pain. I think I got this fever thing at the end of a really hard week of working out. So where I was going to have a few days of recovery, my muscles and joints instead got hit by this thing, and I think it made it even worse. So that was rough. On the Monday, I had to cancel the first podcast I've ever had to cancel. So that sucked. And then Tuesday, I had a meeting. I was meant to guest on another podcast. I have a screen. I had to cancel that. But Wednesday, I was back recording podcasts and getting my shit done. If you follow the Patreon, patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, $1 a month, you will have seen who I recorded with on Sunday. And your head will be in your hands. Your heart will be in your mouth. It's an amazing one. As I record this intro, it's Friday, so I've not recorded it yet. So if I've not posted anyone, then that's a shame. Because the person I've got lined up, I think they've probably done my favourite opening line in any movie ever. And you know, I think often regarded potentially as just generally the best opening line in a movie ever. And they've been in just some of the best movies. They're an absolute legend. So pretty excited about that. I'll let you theorise on that yourselves, or just as said, patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, $1 a month, mate, bargain. Anyway, I'm gonna go because I'm still not 100% cured. Oh, I went to the WWE Performance Center this week on Thursday. It was so cool. No one generally gets to go there except for the wrestlers and that. Like, genuinely, I get there. It's the UK one. I ring the bell, because I'm not sure if I'm in the right place. The door gets answered. It gets answered by Volta, the WWE UK champion. I was like, all right, wicked. This is mad. And I got to have a look around and I hang out, and it was pretty cool. Anyway, I did some posts about it and posted some photos. And some of the lads from the UK stuff have asked to use my photos in their profile pictures and that. And like wrestling blogs and that were like, oh, no one's posted any pictures of the UK Performance Centre yet. I got clearance to do so and everything. And tonight I'm heading to NXT UK in Brentwood, Essex, because that's just up the road from me, isn't it? So that's exciting. Anyway, tonight as I record this, obviously, not tonight as you're listening to it, you'll listen to it on a Wednesday or later. Anyway, this is a long outro and it's not that interesting. All right. Next week's guest, as I mentioned, is Bill Blooming Bailey. And then I've got some really special ones coming up. Obviously, I've got some great guests, but I've also got a bonus episode that really means a lot to me. I might have a mini episode with one of my favourite directors of all time, who I can only get a short amount of time with, but he's a legend, so I wanted to. Yeah, a lot of good stuff to come. All right, I'll talk to you all later. Ta-ta!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.